dive from my visitor.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, March 24th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. Welcome, members. Welcome, members of the public. If anyone is here on Senate Bill 331, we do not have the paperwork ready to move that bill today, so we'll be taking it up another day, so you can go if you're here for that. And now I'm going to open first a work session on SJR 4. And members, I'll ask Aaron to tell us, just remind us what this is, and then we've got Ledge Council to explain it to us.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, SJR 4 was originally heard on March 12th. It is a measure that proposes amendment to Oregon Constitution to prohibit legislative assembly or people from fixing age for mandatory retirement of judges. It refers the amendment to voters at the next regular general election. We had a no revenue, and a fiscal statement was issued on the expense related to the cost of the ballot measure and the production of the ballot measure for an election. We had a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment clarifies that the amendment to the Oregon Constitution affects judges elected on or after amendment is approved by voters in 2016. There was some questions at the last meeting regarding the prohibition against the legislative assembly or people from fixing age for mandatory retirement. We have been joined by legislative council to address what that means and what that effect is.
Okay, so we have legislative counsel. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself and answer our question, that would be great.
Yeah, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Marisa James. I'm deputy legislative counsel. So I think the question was whether the new provision says that the legislative assembly or the people may not fix an age for mandatory retirement of judges. And the question was whether that constitutional provision could be changed in the future, and yes, it could be changed just in the way that you're changing the Constitution here. The legislature could refer it to the people, or the people could do it by initiative. They could vote to institute a mandatory retirement age like we had before.
I think that Senator Boquist can speak for himself, but I think the question was more, did we have to have this language drafted the way it is currently drafted?
Chair Rosenbaum, members, Senator Boquist. So if you want to constitutionally prevent a mandatory retirement age, yes, you do. Without this language, the law would be silent on that issue, and you could have a statutory mandatory retirement age, which would be easier to change than a constitutional one, but it would not prevent it entirely.
And that's why it's drafted this way, basically.
Yes.
Okay, yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For me, the issue was not whether we could prohibit, or the Constitution of people could prohibit the legislature from making that kind of a decision. It's the oddity of saying, nor the people. Why is that there? The people ought to be able to, by initiative, do whatever they want.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, I believe that's because the people by initiative could make a statutory change, and so the Constitution is preventing that from occurring.
So why is that in there? Why wouldn't we let them do that?
Well, that's a policy decision.
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So here's a more simple question. The policy of, you know, not fixing their mandatory age is not the issue. The question is how you say it. Is there not a better way or a different way to say this that is not in the negative that's in here? So when the people look at that and say, no, we want the right, so we're going to vote no, when this is actually written sort of in the negative. Instead of the Constitution saying, you know, judges can't be mandatorily retired due to age. We've said the legislative assembly and the people cannot fix it. Is there not a different way to say, to accomplish the same, say it differently so that the common person on the street understands it?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist, the sentence probably could be rewritten that way. I think no matter what you do, it's going to be in the negative somehow, because the point is to say that you cannot do it.
But it sounds like people are raising different questions here. Senator Beyer, your question seems to be, you don't think people should be prohibited from proposing a statutory change to put a mandatory retirement age when the point of the bill is to prohibit a mandatory retirement age for judges, which we currently have.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I guess Senator Boquist raises a good point. First point is I don't think we should be, the legislature should be denying the people to do whatever they want. That's the whole basis of the initiative process. If they choose to do that, it's their constitution. It doesn't belong to the legislature, it belongs to the people. The other one, why couldn't you just say there should be no age limits for judges? Just put it, as you said, in the positive.
Right. Put it in the positive. And then that leaves it up to the people to decide later whether they want to do an initiative, they ask the legislature to do a referendum or something. Anyway.
So you're just asking, could we use different language to accomplish the same thing?
Yeah.
And I guess
in the more positive sense.
Uh-huh. Rather than saying the people may not fix, just take out the
word
people
and
say. And
there shall not be, just say it, that there should be no age limit for judicial.
There will be no mandatory retirement age for judicial appointees or judicial electees.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist and Beyer, I mean, that wouldn't change the effect of this. People still would have to do an initiative to change the Constitution to impose a mandatory retirement age, but the people would not be mentioned in that sentence. So it would have the same effect, but if you prefer different language, I'm sure we
I think some people are reacting just to the way the language sounds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the electorate is generally the person who works on it. And in my district, I don't know about your districts, but I do have some fairly significant rural areas like Senator Beyer. They're going to look at this and say, I don't care how the Secretary of State writes it with three on one side and three on the other. They're going to look at it and say, well, this prohibits us from doing what we want to do, and it's a no vote. Mm-hmm. When, in fact, they don't really understand that all we're doing is saying, if you want to elect a judge, you can elect him until he's 106. That's
okay,
what we're really doing here.
It sounds like we need to work on a further amendment then to change the language. So, well, thank you for your testimony and look forward to seeing that back again.
That were a difficult punch to
please. Okay, so members, I think that was all we had on that. I'll close the work session on SJR 4. And next go to open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 671. I believe we have, Aaron's going to tell us about it, and Senator Hansel, if you'd like to come forward.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 671 requires Oregon Department of Administrative Services to transfer ownership of certain real property to City of Pendleton, requires certain assurances by the Department of Administrative Services at time. There's a dash one amendment. It provides specific property and tax lot information for state-owned property being transferred to the city, and the properties being transferred are Blue Mountain Recovery Center and Oregon Eastern Oregon Training Center sites. It requires Oregon Department of Administrative Services to provide proof that properties are environmentally clean, evidenced by inspection and tested, needed through phase one and phase two of site assessments. We received right before the committee a fiscal impact statement. We have hard copies of it available to you. I will just quickly summarize that it affects three different departments: Department of Human Services, Department of Administrative Services, and Department of Environmental Quality. Minimal impacts to Human Services and Oregon Health Authority and to the Department of Administrative Services, and there is no impact to DEQ. The statement just explains how and why that is true. And it's before you this afternoon, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Hansel, welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29. Senate Bill 671 is the result of two emergency board meetings held in 2014. On September 16, 2014, Pendleton Mayor Phil Houck and Regional Solutions Coordinator Scott Fairley came before the board to present a strategy on how to mitigate the economic impact caused by the closure of the Blue Mountain Recovery Center in Pendleton. The reason for this was the result of a budget note that was attached to House Bill 5201 during the 2014 session. The budget note directed the State of Oregon to work with the community of Pendleton and local partners to develop a strategy on how to mitigate the economic impact caused by the closure of the Recovery Center. Further, it asked that the strategy include how the state can invest the resources to mitigate said impact. Based on that budget note, Regional Solutions began holding meetings with many individuals in Pendleton, and one of those in attendance and active participation was former Representative Bob Jensen. Representative Jensen spent a great portion of his time in the legislature trying to find a way to use this location in Pendleton for something other than the problems it was creating. Their findings included many key aspects. They requested $935,000 to demolish the Blue Mountain Recovery Center, that the land be conveyed to the city of Pendleton for industrial development. They believe, based on existing uses around the property, the site would support about 80 manufacturing jobs in Pendleton. At the time of closure, DAS was spending about $903,000 for operations and maintenance of the recovery center. In addition to that, the group requested $100,000 to demolish 11 buildings at the former Eastern Oregon Training Center site, that this land be conveyed as well. Pipes had frozen and roofs leaked, and the buildings were falling apart in that particular portion of the request. It was asked that they be conveyed to the city of Pendleton for development to be marketed for community college and workforce housing, which had been identified as a high need in the area. After this presentation in September, the emergency board requested that Mr. Fairley and Mayor Holt come back before them in December with the request for what state resources needed to implement the strategy that were not currently available in existing agency budgets. In December, this is the second meeting, they came back before the emergency board and reported that $1,035,000 was needed for demolishing the former BMRC building as well as the buildings at the former training center. They also requested the land the buildings were sitting on be conveyed to the city. The emergency board granted the finances to demolish the buildings and agreed the land should be conveyed to the city of Pendleton. Shortly after that meeting, it was discovered that the emergency board did not have the authority to convey the land to the city. Senate Bill 671 simply allows for Pendleton to have the land these buildings originally were placed on. Also, it states that DAS and the state of Oregon must convey the land to the city with a letter showing the locations of all the buried utility lines, as well as no further action needed on any cleanup. Senate Bill 671 is the last step for the Pendleton and Regional Solutions to move this project forward, and as DAS and the state no longer have plans for the property, Pendleton can develop the land and use it in such a way as to stimulate the local economy and create the needed jobs for the region. Also, in the meantime, working with DAS, we have come up with -1 amendments, of which I and the city are certainly supportive of. Some of the buildings that were originally designed to be transferred, actually demolished and transferred, it turns out that they are still being used by the department and should remain in state control. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions as well as to carry the bill on the floor if you so desire. Okay. If you happen to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Hensel? I don't see any questions for you, so thank you very much for bringing this to us. And I will call Chuck Wood. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Chuck Wood. I am City Councilor, Ward 2, City of Pendleton. And I bring greetings from Mayor Houck and City Manager Rob, who said I could come here today and do my first testimony in front of you folks. So if I mess up, please forgive me. I'm really here just to affirm that the city is 100% in back of this bill. As you know, we lost Blue Mountain Recovery Center back in 2013. With that, we lost 160 employees in a 60-bed mental health facility. And so we've been working diligently with our partners trying to come up with Plan 2, which is what's before you today. In addition to the property that Senator Hensel has talked about being used for workforce development and for housing that we need in the city. We've also been working to replace some of the mental health capacity that we lost back in 2013. As you know, there were three five-bed facilities that were placed on the former EOTC campus with the loss of BMRC. And there is one building that still remains there. We call it the L building, and we're working with Greater Oregon Behavioral Health, Inc., GOBI, if you know GOBI, the county, and with OHA to repurpose that building for additional mental health capacity up to 20 employees. I think that's all I have to say. I thank you very, very much for the opportunity to be here, and also give thanks to Senator Hansel and Representative Barreto, who were the sponsors of this bill. Any questions?
Do we have any questions? I do not see any, so thank you again.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Barry Pack and Eric Grundy, if you'd like to come forward. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Chief Operating Officer with the Department of Administrative Services, and Eric Grundy from our Real Estate Services Division. We're here today to talk to you about the changes made to the printed bill by the -1 amendment, which we requested through the committee. Three principal changes to the printed bill. The first is to more accurately describe the parcels that would be conveyed from the state to the city based off of more recent survey work that's been completed as part of our demolition planning for the properties, and to designate in the bill the tax lots and the various boundaries of those parcels that will be transferred. The second piece, as Senator Hansel mentioned, was the original bill was requesting an L-shaped building in one of the parcels also be conveyed to the city. That building is still being operated and maintained by the Oregon Health Authority, and they have plans to continue on with it in the future. There are also some zoning issues with being able to convey that small of a section of a building outside of a larger parcel that's not being discussed as transferring to the city. So that piece is taken out of the bill. And then the third change involves how we prove that the site has been thoroughly remediated and is environmentally clean and ready to go for development. We had some concerns around the way the original wording required a letter of no further action from the Department of Environmental Quality, which is a process that comes after the end of a process they initiate, as opposed to us just cleaning up a piece of property and conveying it over. And so we've suggested an alternative that gets to the same end result, but in a slightly different way. And Mr. Grundy is probably better suited to explain the details of that if you have questions.
Okay. Did you have testimony also? You were just here to answer questions. Okay, any questions? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just Barry, if we do this, please make sure it's done right. I'm refereeing a fight between the previous bill that we just did this to for a ranking member of the majority party and some disgruntled people, and so make sure the transfer has all the buildings right, the surveys are right, everything else, so no one's confused what gets moved from point A to B, and L building doesn't end up over at Fish and Wildlife.
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, your point is well taken. We have combed through this as accurately as we possibly can, and if I can, maybe I will also address a question that I know is out there around the use of the word approximately as we describe the size of the acreage. And that is because the current survey was based off of our demolition planning. To get it to the fullest possible micro inch would take a lot more advanced surveying, so we leave a little wiggle room in there so that when we actually do transfer it over, if we're 2 feet off from where we are today, those 2 feet can still transfer over.
Okay, any others?
No.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And so that completes our witness list, and we have the paperwork, it looks like, on the amendment and ready to go on the bill. We are in a work session.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farrioli.
I move that we adopt the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 671.
Senator Farrioli has moved to adopt the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 671. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 671 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Senator Farrioli has moved Senate Bill 671 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Any objection? Motion carries, and we'll ask Senator Hansel to be our carrier on the floor. Thank you, Senator Hansel. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 671.
And Madam Chair,
yes,
nice try on the L building, Senator Hansel.
Okay. And that brings us to open a public hearing and possible work session, just to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 289. Erin.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 289 establishes legislative policy on conducting periodic reviews of state boards, commissions, and other small entities within executive branch of state government to enhance budget and government efficiency, minimize duplication of effort, and enhance efforts of entities in meeting current needs of Oregonians. We have two amendments before you. One, the dash one, which is related to the underlying bill, which removes the Legislative Commission on Indian Services from list of entities subject to review. And then the dash three amendment, which actually replaces the underlying measure and inserts a language related to training for boards and commissions. It requires Oregon Department of Administrative Services to develop and administer training program to provide training and instruction on government ethics laws, restriction on political activities that apply to public officials and employees, public records and meeting laws, and other issues of benefit. It requires training to be offered twice per year to all new members or employees of any board, commission, or other small entity of the executive department who must attend one within 6 months of start of service. There is an emergency clause on the dash three amendment. It does replace the underlying bill entirely.
Okay, and so we have Kendall Claston and Barry Pack, if you'd both like to come forward.
Just do it.
We also have legislative counsel in the room to explain, right? But we don't need them yet, or should we have them come up?
We just get rid of them.
Should we have them come up too? Yeah, Dexter, would you like to come forward too? Do we need another chair? No, we've got three. Okay, great. Okay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kendall Claussen. I'm Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Brown. We're here to talk about Senate Bill 289, to give you a bit of history about this bill and how it came about. In 2012, Secretary of State Brown conducted an audit on statewide boards and commissions. Amongst many of the findings, the primary one was that boards and commissions over the years had become proliferated. They made several recommendations to the governor's office to consider, the first being sunsetting boards and commissions. The second is requiring training for all new members of boards and commissions. The third is developing sunrise and sunset criteria for boards and commissions. And finally, establishing a formal complaint procedure and action process. So with Senate Bill 289, it was filed pre-session by then Governor Kitzhaber for DAS as a placeholder to implement some of the recommendations that were found in the audit. It directs the presiding officers to appoint a legislative committee to determine whether the executive branch boards and commissions should have a sunset. Each board and commission would be listed with a date that could then be considered for repeal or for sunset. So the primary focus of this bill was that it was about sunsetting boards and commissions. However, we are working on an amendment to this bill, which Mr. Pack will talk to you a little bit about the specifics.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Chief Operating Officer at the Department of Administrative Services. And we do have the dash three. I think we also have a dash. Is the dash three the most current one, Dexter? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So we have the dash three amendment, which again, as Kendall mentioned, focuses on training. It's one of probably the pieces where we recognize the greatest opportunity for improvement and a reduction of risk among all of the small boards and commissions and all the volunteer citizens that we ask to provide time and service to the state. I think the idea here is to give DAS the authority and then probably we'll have this conversation down the road about the resources to provide, so to develop and then provide some trainings on some of the very basic fundamentals that are important for board members to know as it relates to public records laws and public meetings laws, as it relates to supervision of staff, perhaps accounting, procurement, all of the rules and policies that boards and commissions as agents of the state must follow, but that, you know, there's no real reason why we should expect our general citizens to understand what all of those are. Training is one of those things that has gone away over time as the state has faced budget shortfalls, and we'd like to be able to see some reinstitution and some expansion, actually, of this training. Board members get a handbook when they arrive, but it's no substitute for actually sitting down and having the conversation about what the rules are and where the potential pitfalls lie. So the amendment would require the development of the training, that we would offer it at least 3 times a year, and that the board members participate in the training within 6 months of their confirmation and the start of their service on the board. Now, we, in drafting the amendment and talking with legislative counsel, we have a slight issue with the relating clause, but we wanted to be able to come, and we appreciate the chair's indulgence, to come to you and talk about the desire and the approach that we're proposing, albeit this vehicle may not be the one in which we could actually accomplish it.
Okay. Dexter, would you like to tell us about that?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Counsel. And, yeah, I unfortunately am the bearer of bad news here. As you all know, the Oregon Constitution requires that all matters within a bill be within a single subject that's expressed in the title of the bill. The title of this bill is relating to monitoring the efficacy of state government entities. And unfortunately, the proposed amendment, which, as Mr. Pack described, deals with training, really doesn't have any monitoring component at all. And so, therefore, it is outside, in my view, outside the relating clause of that bill.
Okay. I don't know who had their hand up first.
Let Senator Beyer.
Senator Beyer, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little surprised this bill's here. I remember way back to the 70s, there was a sunset law that required a cycle for all state agencies to be reviewed periodically, and I'm not sure that's not still in effect, but I know it was there, and I know at least over the first decade and a half, all the agencies were reviewed a couple of times, and I think the only one that was done away with was the Watchmakers Commission, which fought very hard to try and get themselves put back in place. So I kind of wonder about that. And I also spent my first interim back in the 91-92 year under Governor Roberts going through this elaborate review. I mean, we spent almost 18 months looking at all the boards and commissions, and at the end of the process said, boy, was this ever a waste of time. All the commissions wanted to be retained. They all were self-financed, and the only thing they wanted was they wanted out from under legislative control with all of the tort provisions that were contained in the law and a lot of other things. So I'm a little skeptical about this. The other piece on the training, I'm not sure why you're here asking for legislative authority to do that, since it's totally within the executive authority to do that. And I remember going through that training when I was first appointed to the Public Utility Commission, and I remember at least twice participating as one of the trainers for other commissions during my time there. So you clearly have the authority to do it. Unless you're asking for money, I'm not sure you need it. Need legislation. Good idea, though. Good idea.
Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer. I mean, you're exactly right. What we do realize that there is a monetizing that has to occur around this. We have 312 boards and commissions, approximately 3,000 people who are serving on these statewide boards and commissions. At this point, we don't have anything that is a systematized curriculum that explains these key points that we discussed. But it will cost us money to provide that level of training at the tick that we're suggesting.
That's called the governor's budget.
Yes, sir. Noted.
I'm done.
Okay.
Ditto times two, what he said.
What
ditto times two, what he said. Yeah. I don't know why they're here.
All right.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the original Senate Bill 289, I had brought the Dash 1 amendment, which was drafted to remove the Legislative Council on Indian Services from the bill. Hmm. The bill has included LCIS with a sunset date, which would, Madam Chair, destroy our longstanding commitment for government-to-government relations with Oregon's nine treaty tribes. So I thought that that was ill-advised, unwise, and likely to elicit a negative response from the nine treaty tribes represented by on the LCIS. The other issue, Madam Chair, is that the Legislative Commission on Indian Services doesn't fit within the description of the bill, which is aimed at the executive branch. Let me make very clear that the Legislative Commission on Indian Services is not in the executive branch. It's in the legislative branch of government. So other than those two little details, 289 was a great concept. But if we are, as I perceive we want to do, not likely to take action on either the Dash 3 or the Dash 1 or even Senate Bill 289, I'll just hold on to the Dash 1 amendments and look to the relating clause issue to obviate the Dash 3 amendments and wait for the vehicle that we will eventually look at for the Dash 3 amendment, if not a complete redraft. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Senator Farrioli. I don't see anyone else who wants to comment. So we'll thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I'll close the... Oh, we have one more witness signed up, Laura Lockwood McCall, if you'd like to come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you very much for an opportunity to speak. I'm Laura Lockwood McCall, Director of Debt Management in the Oregon State Treasury. And I was only speaking to, obviously, the three commissions, little commissions that my staff oversees that I was trying to protect, similar to Senator Farrioli's Dash 1 amendment, one of which is the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, which is made up of two members of the legislature, someone from DAS, the treasurer, a public member. That's important to our state credit rating. And if the bill were to pass, I think it would send a bad signal to the rating agencies that we weren't interested in prudent debt management. So I mostly just came to speak and say that I would hope that we could be carved out as well, if possible.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And that completes our witness sign-up on this bill. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 289. And that brings us to Senate Bill 6. So I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 6. I think we have quite a list of people signed up. Before we get to that, we'll ask Erin to tell us about the bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 6 extends terms of office for members of the Commission for the Blind and has an emergency clause on the measure. You have a Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment requires at least four members who are qualified persons within legal definition of persons who are blind to serve on the Commission, limits Commission members to two consecutive terms, permits members on Commission prior to passage to serve more than two consecutive terms, but not more than 10 consecutive terms. Currently, members on the Commission for the Blind serve two-year terms. They are looking to move it to four-year terms.
Okay. Last. Okay. So, okay. Why don't we call? I'm gonna probably. Okay. Let's call. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but you'll correct me. Luanda Miranda, Larry Morey, and Chris Morey. I can't tell if it's Morsu. But if the three of you would like to come forward.
Great.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And whoever wants to go first, just go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for your time. I'm in support of extending.
And if you could just start by saying your name again.
Oh, yeah. LaWanda Miranda. I'm from Central Oregon, Prineville. And I am with the Business Enterprise Program and the chair, which is a program for blind business people. So I do support the term limit being extended. For one reason is when we get new commissioners, it takes a while to get them, you know, well-versed and up to speed on the different programs that are represented through the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And also our last commissioner's position that was open was a business position, and it took almost 2 years to fill that position. So sometimes it's just hard to find qualified participants. And we have a lot of challenging things going on within our program. And soon, I believe it's in June, we'll be losing three of our commissioners that know a lot about the future of our program. And so I think it would be very devastating if we lose those three commissioners and have them replaced with someone new. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and Senators. My name is Chris Morris, and I'm from Yamhill County. And I support Measure 6, or Senate Bill 6, in the term limit. I feel that extending the length of term is very important in that it will keep the same people in longer and help them get their programs going. And like LaWanda says, that when they come in new after 2 years, when they come in and are only there for 2 years, they don't get their programs up to speed by 2 years. So it's important that they're longer.
Hey, thank you.
Hi, my name is Lurie Morse, Madam Chairman, Senators. I'm speaking on behalf of supporting this bill. I've been with my wife involved in the blind community for many years, and been to many commission meetings over the years. And as new commissioners come on, one of the problems that we see, several of the commissioners are not blind. Sometimes we have two, maybe three that are. The people that aren't blind don't, most of them, have a real working knowledge of what the commission is for, what blind people need, and what they want. And by the time their two-year term is coming up, they're just beginning to get it. There's a big learning curve in figuring out and learning what blind people need and what they don't need. And with the governor having the authority, of course, to reappoint, there's been times where somebody's, okay, I'm getting with the swing of things, I'm understanding what's going on, and then they're gone before they can really work with the, you know, improving the blind community, the services of the blind community. In the past, the Commission for the Blind has had some audit problems, and the, in my opinion, part of that was there wasn't good oversight, even though the commission is a controlling commission, not just an advisory commission, on what was going on, because they were not up to speed. The allowing commissioners to be there for 4 years not only gives them time to learn what they're doing, but then be an active participant in controlling or dealing with the Commission for the Blind and giving it direction. And that is why I'm very in favor of extending the term limits from 2 to 4 years, and I'd like to see them be there for 3 terms of 4 years, at least. If I had my way, there would be no ending limit other than the governor's choice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so we'll let you go.
Thank you for your time.
And next we'll call Randy Houth, Pat Wallace, James Edwards.
You got it backwards. This is Brady. Excuse us. This is Lefty. Okay. Our left. Straight ahead.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee, and whoever wants to go first.
If I may.
Go ahead, Randy.
All right. Good afternoon.
You don't need to be so close to the microphone.
Okay.
They're very sensitive.
Okay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Randy Houth, and I am a lifelong blind Oregon resident. And I'm also a consumer of the Oregon Commission for the Blind. I have been a licensed blind vendor through the Business Enterprise Program for approximately 30 years. Until recently, I served as the elected chairperson for the Committee of Blind Vendors, elected by my peers for approximately 10 years. Recently, I formulated with other blind Oregon residents Blind Employment Services of Tomorrow. It's an Oregon-based nonprofit trade association that advocates for persons who are blind. And I am here today in opposition of Senate Bill 6. And I'd like to share with you some of my concerns and ask that you please consider those as you take into consideration Senate Bill 6. First and foremost, I believe, as I read through Senate Bill 6, it doesn't really have any meat to it other than just simply extending the terms of the commissioners. I believe the quality of service to any commission board, specifically in this instance, the blind commission and the commissioners, there needs to be a substance and a quality to just continue the terms, we believe, misses the mark. I believe by doing so, by proposing to continue and extend the terms, could cause more harm to Oregon's blind residents than it does bring in relief. There are still serious concerns within the Oregon Commission for the Blind and the Business Enterprise Program. Like I said, I was the elected chairperson for 10 years. I'm pretty well versed in the Commission for the Blind's infrastructure or sometimes lack thereof. There's certain things going on right now which I believe if we had more quality and more oversight through the commission board wouldn't necessarily be occurring. The Secretary of State's audit was conducted, I believe, in 2011. From what we can tell, there's still serious concerns that have not been addressed. If you look at one picture, the Business Enterprise Consumer Program, the Business Enterprise Program, for the 2013-2015 budget, they are projected to be $650,000 overspent, and that's in a program budget of about $750,000. There's very high attorney general costs related to grievances. There's several lawsuits. There is a serious concern. There was $70,000 spent with the Confluence Center related to the rulemaking process through the OARs over the last year. That product, even though it was worked together through a collaborative effort and adopted by the elected committee, has been discarded, and a new process has been brought forward. I can tell you that I know that there's an official complaint on record, and it just, when you look behind the scenes there, it just looks like there's not enough oversight. So we're concerned that some of the commissioners that currently are requesting to continue and extend their terms have been part of the lack of oversight. Also, the Oregon Industries for the Blind was closed down recently, as many of you may know, and it simply wasn't from the governor's executive order. There was an independent audit done of that program, and there were serious findings and concerns. So I would just urge, if we are looking at doing something with the oversight body, please let's look about accountability. Please let's look about reporting authority and identifying the true meat and potatoes of guiding an agency like this, because you know, I love the Commission for the Blind. I'm a blind person, and I support those rights for people who are blind, but I really fear for the commission unless we can get this dialed in and just, you know, stop continuing the pattern of poor administration. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is James Edwards. I'm from the small city of Lakeside, Coos County. I'm also the president of the American Council of Blind of Oregon and a former commissioner for the Commission for the Blind. And regarding the terms of office for the Commission for the Blind, I and my constituents, the ones that I've talked to, see no harm in extending the terms of service for the commissioners. Our interest is in the performance of individual commissioners. We hope any person appointed as a commissioner will take a sincere interest in the issues, do diligent research, and represent the blind community in the manner that is expected of them to protect our rights for equality, our safety, health, and welfare. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat Wallace, and I'm a consumer and a member of Blind Employment Services of Tomorrow, and I own my own company for called Entrepreneurs of America for the Blind, and I received services through the commission in the past, and I've been here about 3 years. I have been a member of other organizations and been with the blind community for 45 years, and I would say that Bill 6, I'm against completely. The people that are serving the blind on this commission board have lost focus of the blind, and it needs to be dialed in, and we need to get fresh people in there and get new ideas and get people that really want to get back to the basics. And I think that we need new ideas. These people have been serving for a while, and we're seeing negative outcomes, lawsuits, problems, and they're just going along and rubber stamping what's happening in the agency. The real blind of Oregon across the state are not getting served. So I would ask you to really look at this and vote this down. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions for these folks?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farrioli.
I'm going to just share a perspective and ask for additional input. The folks on this committee are lay people. We do not have any particular or special expertise other than a very deep interest in serving our fellow Oregonians in the capacity that we serve in. We're often confronted with the issues that come from divisions within communities, and we're expected to arbitrate in those or mediate in those divisions. I'll point out over years, I've seen the chiropractic board develop a schism between two different disciplines of practice within chiropractic. And there have been hotly debated issues on a variety of boards and commissions. But as laypersons, we're probably the least best qualified to arbitrate these issues. So I would ask you to be more specific or candid about the issues, and possibly not in the public hearing setting, but in emails and direct conversations with members. Mostly we are just very grateful for the willingness of Oregonians to serve on boards and commissions. They do so without compensation. We assume that they do so with the best interest of the served community at heart. And if they're not performing to the best interest of the community as a whole, then we would expect the community to be able to articulate with very great specificity what the deficiencies are and what the remedy should be. The bill before us simply extends the term of office of those folks, not with any reference to the commissioners that are currently on the board, but with reference to the idea that you probably need two terms to be able to fully master the topic and be efficient and be effective as a board member. It's very common that in our boards and commissions we have two-year terms. I think that's almost the standard. So we would really just be bringing this board into rough compliance with what's become a standard for boards and commissions. So I need more help in understanding what specific remedies that you are desiring. And it may have nothing to do with extending the term. It may have more to do with the current composition of the board, which issue really is addressed at the governor's office, since every one of those members, I believe, serves at the pleasure of the governor.
Okay, thank you, Senator Farioli. Did anyone wish to respond? Or you can certainly follow up one-on-one. It does not have to be now.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I will do as you ask, and I will provide you in less than this setting some specific concerns that maybe will share more the specificity of our concerns and some of the other persons who are blind that I know. It's not necessarily about the terms per se, even though this does propose an extension to the terms up to 12 years. And we certainly understand those people are volunteers and, you know, intended to be well-meaning, trying to help persons who are blind. Our concerns are sometimes maybe we have seen that's not always the case. So members of the committee, if I can provide you additional information with specifics that you can consider, I'd be more than happy to do that, and we'll do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Manager.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you very much. And yeah, that's great. Thank you all three for your testimony. And we have Joshua Bauer and then Commissioner Carla McQuillan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you very much. And I first like to say I appreciate you taking the time to hear us out as blind Oregonians. For the record, my name is Joshua Bowen. I am an independent contractor through the Oregon Commission for the Blind, and I run my own business teaching iPhones and technology to those who are blind and visually impaired. I would like to say that I am actually in opposition of Senate Bill 6, and I would like to supplement the testimony that was given by a lot of the people here who were saying that merely extending the term of service is not adequate. what needs to happen is there needs to be issues that have not been addressed, such as orientation and mobility and technology-related issues for the blind, and especially the orientation and mobility sector. That is a very critical sector for us as a blind community. And also that merely extending the term from 2 to 4 years will not address that problem. What I feel as a citizen needs to occur is that there needs to be much more oversight by people who have the disabilities, who are visually impaired, to influence the outcome of these decisions, because as sighted people, people with vision, you may not fully understand the full ramifications of what it is like to be a blind or visually impaired individual. And as a blind person, these services are absolutely critical, such as technology, orientation, and mobility. Without these services, and without them being taught properly through organizations like the Commission for the Blind, it decreases the independence of blind and visually impaired Oregonians, such as myself and those who I assist with my unique talents and skills. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senators. I missed you, Senator Beyer, when we were here a couple weeks ago. My name is Carla McQuillan. I am the Executive Director of Main Street Montessori Association. We operate 3 Montessori preschools in the Lane County area. I am also the President of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon, and I have served in that capacity for once and then again for 17 of the past 24 years. And I'm also the vice chair of the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And one of the reasons that we believe that this particular bill is important is literally by observing the other folks who have come onto the board who are not members of the blind community. There are 3 positions, according to the statute, and this was one of the things that I raised, and I don't know if you've gotten any proposed amendments for this, but the language of the bill, of the law, currently states that 4 of the 7 members of the Commission for the Blind Board shall be blind. What I believe the intent of that was when the law was written in the 70s was that at least a majority of the members of the blind shall, or of the board, shall be blind. And the reason being, supported by everything that people have said here today, the blindness community is a very specialized group. There's a lot of different programs and services that most people don't understand. So under the law, there has to be 3 people who are not blind on the board. So frequently we get people into the board who really have no concept whatsoever of the needs of the people in the blind community, the programs and services offered by the Commission for the Blind. LaWanda was saying earlier when she got up here that the business person's position was open for almost 2 years. That's because they couldn't find someone to serve in that capacity, and it wasn't open for blind people because there were already 4 blind individuals serving on the board. This is something I would like to have entertained because, quite frankly, as a blind business person and also an educator, I would qualify to serve in either of those 2 capacities, but primarily those 2, the business person, the educator, and the ophthalmologist or eye care professional, I think is the way it's worded, are held by sighted people because that's just kind of traditionally what's happened. And it would be really nice if you had a bit of a different perspective by having a blind person serve in any or all of those positions. And quite frankly, if the whole board was blind, that wouldn't be a bad thing after all, would it? I would like to address a couple of the things that Josh just mentioned, orientation, mobility. The board met in a strategic planning session not even a year ago, and one of the 2 priorities that we identified as things that the commission absolutely had to focus our energy on were independent living skills. That was one of them, and also a timely service provision of services through the agency. We've been extremely successful in the timely service administration, and we are working on the importance of independent living skills that blind people need in order to function in the community. I would say that with regard to concerns of the people that are on the board, the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind and also of the agency is that it's our responsibility as blind people to be out there making our way in the world, not to have things handed to us. And like you were saying, Senator Farioli, there's a bit of a split in some of the community as to which role the agency ought to play, one that is there to help and support the for lack of a better phrase, entitlement mentality, or the one that is to get people out working and being contributing members of a community. And that's where I think some of the friction comes in. But in speaking with my fellow commissioners, the ones who are there who have been on the board for less than a year, that's three of them right now, would very much like to see the terms extended. They're all cited and believe that this is a learning curve they had no idea they were getting themselves into. So the sense that we got when we brought this up at the board meeting last February was that the commissioners are supportive of this. I've gotten support from the agency administration, and also one of the agency staff, Angel Hale, is here in case there's any questions that I can't answer. She can. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions? Okay, I don't see any questions for you.
All right,
so we'll
thank you so much.
Thank you again. That actually completes the sign-up sheet. Is there anyone who didn't get a chance to sign up but wants to testify on Senate Bill 6? Okay, I don't see anyone else. So,
Chair?
Yes, Senator
I have a question. I don't know to whom to direct the question.
Okay.
So the concept of more oversight has been mentioned a couple of times, and it's not clear to me who would provide the oversight, whether that would be a legislative responsibility, whether that would come through the appointing authority, which is the governor's office, whether that would be through the appointments secretary or that process. So I'm not really sure how to respond to the request for additional oversight. And if somebody could address the issue of by whom, that might help me understand the what of it.
Well, that's a good question. If someone wants to try to answer it, you're welcome to come forward and say your name again for the record.
While they're coming forward, Madam Chair, is there an amendment in process like was mentioned?
Good afternoon.
There is an amendment here that we already have.
Good afternoon again, Madam Chair,
Hi.
Members of the committee. While I'm not an expert in this area, it's something that we have discussed and tried to fine-tune. This was not a bill that we sponsored, but we did offer to be at the proverbial table to see if we could introduce some ideas, concepts that maybe would fine-tune this committee. So when we talk about oversight from many of our positions, the Commission for the Blind Board, as Mr. Wallace said, has been a rubber stamping board. So the agency brings the ideas and the commission simply rolls along with it, and we believe it hasn't served them very well. Case in point, the Secretary of State's audit, the RSA audit, so forth and so on. So what we thought is, would there be a way to have those committee members, those commissioners, submit an annual report to the Legislative Assembly or to the Senate President's office or what you would have? Is there a way to identify by commissioner responsibility? So making sure that the Business Enterprise Program or the VR program or the mobility, so that those commissioners become more in tune with what we would hope to be more improved oversight. I would offer, you know, like I said, I'm not an expert in this, so please forgive me, but I would offer to work with anyone who would be interested in looking at some possible suggested amended language as well. So I don't know if that helps Senator Farioli, but
well, Madam Chair, I think that it's incumbent on me at least, if not, if other members are interested, to get copies of the audits and read the audits. So I would at least offer to do that, and then I'll have some idea of a third-party opinion about how the commission is functioning.
Okay.
Thank
you. Thank you for clarifying. Okay, well, I do not see anybody else who wants to testify, so we have just been in a public hearing, and I think we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 6. Members, that completes the bills we had scheduled for today. I will just remind you that on Thursday this week, we have executive appointments. We do have quite a few people coming to appear, so if you could please be on time, that would be great. Okay, and nothing further to come before us today, we're adjourned. Adjourned. For us today, we're